Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann this week. She's on vacation. Just more than 1,700 votes, or less than 1%. That's all separating Republican candidate Troy Balderson from Democrat candidate Danny O'Connor in the 12th District special election. Balderson declared this a victory last night.
Tonight, I'm going to promise to you that I'm going to work relentlessly, relentlessly for this 12th congressional district.
But there are still more than 8,400 provisional and absentee ballots that must be counted, and O'Connor has yet to concede. Jesse Ballmert, a state government reporter at the Cincinnati Inquirer, joins me to discuss this race. She's in the studio. Jesse, thanks for being here again this week.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners will hear from Democratic candidate Danny O'Connor in a bit. But we also want to hear from you. Do you think the 12th district is still up for grabs? And what questions do you have about this race? Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jesse, well, earlier this week, it was the roundtable, reporter roundtable. You talked about this being a tight race. Did you expect it to be this tight?
I think maybe everyone expected it to be tight, but this is about as tight as it gets. There's something like 1,700 votes that are in between the two candidates right now.
Well, I just got word that Danny O'Connor is on the phone, and I know he's been busy going back and forth for different interviews, so we're going to take him now. Danny O'Connor, good morning. Danny O'Connor, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, good morning.
Great. Good morning.
I'm sure it was a long night for you, as four reporters and everyone else who are keeping a watch on this. At this point, there are more than 8,000 provisional ballots that need to be counted. Now, assuming all of those ballots are valid, you would have to win about 80% of them. So at this point, I guess the question is, do you concede? Do you congratulate Balderson? Do you move on then to the midterm?
Well, you know, we need to make sure that every vote is counted. And some of these ballots are overseas ballots for military personnel, and certainly those are people who we want to respect their right to vote, and we just want this process to work. This is so close right now. We're at halftime in this election, and it's a tie ball game. And we feel great about our message getting across this district, talking to voters about having real change in Washington. And I think that that's why this is so close right now, because we've been crisscrossing this district. I'll represent every county from Muskingum to Franklin all the way up to Richland and everywhere in between when I'm in Washington.
How do you feel this morning?
I feel great. It
wasn't a win, but it wasn't not a win yet. You know?
Yeah, we feel great. I mean, we had a pretty long night, but you know, we're going to be out there again talking to voters today because people want to hear from the folks who are going to fight for them in Washington, D.C., and that's what's important here.
Do you think the provisional ballots will get you within that half percentage point margin for a recount?
I think it seems likely, yeah.
And if that happens, who pays for that? Do you have funds for the recount?
I think that it's automatically triggered by statute. But what we're focused on is just making sure that the process works and that every vote is counted, because we want people to exercise their right to vote. And the right to vote is one of the most important things you can have in a democracy. And when people exercise that, it needs to be given full respect.
Do you feel you and your campaign did everything possible to win over voters in this election?
We're continuing to do everything possible. You know, we're in a present tense situation here where we're continuing to go out and talk to folks. We'll be out today, this afternoon, talking to voters, just again, continuing to crisscross this district, because a representational democracy requires folks to be out in the community, to be hearing the concerns of voters on the ground. And that's why we're running.
Do you think that voters can stay engaged through November? It's already been a long election, and you're going to be keeping doing it, you know, until the November midterms. How do you plan to keep these voters engaged?
I think, you know, absolutely, because people are so excited, and people are excited about the chance to have real leadership in Washington, D.C., and new leadership in Washington, D.C. that's not beholden to corporate interests. I think, you know, I'm someone who isn't taking any corporate money. I'm someone who is fueled by grassroots activists. We've already seen how much excitement there is. You know, yesterday we had so many folks who, you know, regardless of the result yesterday, were saying, hey, we're ready to go. We're ready to keep fighting, because what's at stake here isn't just one seat. It's not just my race. it's our entire fight. It's this fight for a fairer economy. It's a fight for access to health care. It's a fight against folks like Troy Balderson, who want to cut retirement benefits, who wants to raise the retirement age. And that's something that's worth fighting for.
So what's your strategy to reach voters who didn't go to the polls for this special election to get them to turn out in November?
Yeah, we're just the great thing here is we got three more months. So we're going to keep crisscrossing this district. You know, folks are paying attention. Folks are getting tuned in. We're just going to have to go where the voters are. And, you know, I'm willing to do that because I'm a true believer in this community. I'm a believer that this country can be better. I think that, you know, if there's a voter and they're in Zanesville or they're in Mansfield or they're in Newark, I'll go talk to them because these folks need to have a conversation with the person who's going to represent them in Congress.
And what about campaigning in Delaware County? Because I think the way the votes came in, it did come down to that county.
We feel great about Delaware County. I think we did as well as you could do in Delaware County. And, you know, we're going to continue to have conversations there because folks in Delaware County are worried about the same things that folks are worried about in other counties. They're worried about paying their mortgage. They're worried about the rising cost of health care. They're worried about Troy Balderson cutting their retirement benefits and raising the retirement age. These are kitchen table issues that matter to working families, and they need someone who's going to have their back regardless of where they live.
Do you have any idea at this point how long it will be until you know the exact results of this special election?
I don't, you know, especially since things are still coming in and coming in the mail. But, you know, one thing we do know is that, you know, we'll be out today continuing to talk to voters. You know, we're the only campaign in this race that's been talking about real kitchen table issues. We're the only campaign that isn't fueled by D.C. insiders and special interests. And I think that that's something that people are going to be excited to see.
I just wanted to let you know that we have Jessie Ballmert here. She's with the Cincinnati Inquirer, and she has a question for you as well.
Hi.
Hi, Jessie.
Hope you got some sleep last night. I got a little bit. Real quick, is there anything that you've learned from this special election as far as which voters you need to really be targeting in November? Are there parts of this district that you feel like you could get better margins on?
Yeah, you know, I've had a consistent message and a consistent strategy that I'll talk to any voter at any time, anywhere. And that's because I'm going to represent every single one of these folks in Congress. And it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or you're a Democrat or an independent, I'm going to fight for you in Washington. And, you know, we're just going to continue to have conversations. The good thing is, you know, we have 3 months. We'll be out there talking to as many people as we can. We'll be having conversations about real issues. You know, my opponent, Troy Balderson, he talks about is Washington inside baseball stuff. He's not talking about things like retirement. He's not talking about things like healthcare access. We'll be out there having those conversations with voters, and I'm confident that we'll continue to do well because of that.
Do you think that the advertising, the campaign ads, will be different in strategy going forward?
Well, I mean, I think we ran almost universally positive ads from my campaign. And that's something that, you know, is important because people hearing from me about what I want to do, obviously I'd love to talk to every single person in this district in person or have, you know, one of my family members talk to them. But, you know, sometimes we talk through TV ads and having conversations about the future of this country and having a conversation about expanding access to healthcare. My mom, of course, you know, as you might know, is a breast cancer survivor. So healthcare is personal to me. Protecting access for folks who have pre-existing conditions is personal to me. And to think of Troy Balderson wanting to take away access from folks like my mom and raise the retirement age and cut retirement benefits, that's personal for a lot of other folks as well.
And going forward, looking to November, without corporate money, as you say, is it going to be difficult for you to win a midterm election when we know the Republican Party came in full force this time? What kind of backing are you expecting from your party?
Well, I expect to have grassroots support. I mean, that's what's fueled us so far. That's what will fuel us again. We've been fighting like hell across this district with, you know, an army of regular people. You know, Troy Balderson, you know, he has all this outside support because he's going to do exactly what people in Washington, D.C. tell him to do. He's their lapdog. He's not an independent voice. He's someone who will not stand up for the people of the 12th district. If you're a retiree in Zanesville, Troy Balderson is going to turn his back on you. If you're a working family in Licking County or Delaware, Troy Balderson's not going to fight for you. He's going to do what he's told by corporate interests. And that's just not the way we operate. We're going to be fighting for regular people every single day.
We've been talking to Democratic candidate Danny O'Connor in the 12th District special election, which isn't over yet. Danny, we appreciate you calling in today.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. And by the way, we contacted the Balderson campaign, and while they did get back to us, they didn't confirm Troy Balderson being on the air this morning. So we are still hoping to hear from them. We're going to take a break in a bit. And when we do, we hope that Troy Balderson can join the conversation as well. And our phone number here is 614-292-8513. So, Jesse, what do you think the candidates do now? I mean, Danny O'Connor just told us he's still out stumping. Do they just keep going?
Yes, I think for both of them, this is perhaps the race that never ends. They've been fighting very hard for this August special election, and they're going to have to fight just as hard or perhaps harder in the November election. So I think maybe they take a break, grab some coffee with their family, and then get right back out there and talk to the voters that they didn't get this time.
Well, and that was my next question. They will be able to see where they missed votes and where they did get big support. They're going to concentrate on those places that didn't come forward and when they needed them.
Yeah, this is an advantage that most candidates don't have. They have a map of where they did well and where they didn't. I think there are areas where both candidates can say, you know, this worked out well for them. Specifically, the Republican Troy Balderson did well in Muskingum County, his hometown of Zanesville, as expected, but also did well in places like Morrow County and Licking County, which was important because that entire county is in the 12th district. Danny O'Connor was expected to do well in Franklin County, and he did. And I think it all really did come down to Delaware County.
And why was that?
It's partially because Delaware County was a little slow to get their election results up. So it was a populous county that we were waiting on the numbers for. But also because it is an area where the more southern part of the county tends to be Columbus suburbs that might go for Democrats like Danny O'Connor. And then more northern parts are more rural and more likely to perform like Mansfield or some other places. And Delaware County is fascinating because it is the wealthiest county. It has some of the highest education. And these are the voters that people are concerned President Donald Trump might be turning them off. These are the kind of voters that really liked John Kasich. So it's an interesting electorate and one that I think both Troy Balderson and Danny O'Connor are going to have to pay special attention to in November.
And any word on how long it will take to count these provisional and absentee ballots? Danny O'Connor, when we spoke to him, didn't seem to have any idea. And I don't know if we know.
So I spent some time reading the Secretary of State's website this morning.
That's
so
nice light reading. Good for you, Jesse.
Yeah, what can I say? I'm here for you and your listeners. So essentially what happens is their August 18th is when they will start counting these ballots, and I believe the deadline is August 24th for all of them to be tabulated. Like you said, there are about 8,400 between absentees and provisional ballots, and those are people who maybe showed up to the polls and they couldn't be verified that they were registered, or maybe they didn't have, you know, proper identification, that then the boards will go back and check on that. There are people, like Danny O'Connor said, people who sent in ballots from overseas and military, mm-hmm. people who maybe mailed in their ballot the day before. So there are a number of these people who will be counted by the local boards of elections, and that will factor into the final tally.
So I guess that's why he continues to campaign, because it's not over yet. It's just not over yet. We're going to take a break. Listeners, as we've also mentioned, a shout out to Troy Balderson to give us a call this morning to join the conversation. You can call us at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann this week. She's on vacation. The race to take Republican Pat Tiberi's seat isn't over yet. Roughly more than 1,700 votes separate the candidates, but there are more than 8,000 provisional and absentee ballots left to count. The 12th District cuts into Columbus's urban area and out into rural counties. Democrat Danny O'Connor carried Franklin County, but Republican Troy Balderson pulled ahead in surrounding rural counties. Still with us, Jessie Ballmert. She's the state government reporter with the Cincinnati Inquirer. And joining us now, Herb Asher, a professor emeritus of political science at The Ohio State University. Thanks for being here, Herb.
Good to be here.
And joining us by phone, Paul Beck, also a professor emeritus of political science at The Ohio State University. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Gail. Good to be with you.
Thank you. This for both of you, and we'll start with Herb. Earlier, Jessie gave us her reaction to this very close race. I'd like to get reaction from you two. Herb, let's start with you. First of all, did you think it would be this close?
Yes. In one case, I actually had predicted that O'Connor might win. But, you know, what's interesting about this is that the happiest Republican today is Troy Balderson. But the rest of the Republican Party should be very, very nervous, because what this demonstrates very clearly is that the Democrats were extremely competitive. They may yet win after all the provisionals and absentees are counted. They'll have another shot at this district. But the more important lesson is there are probably more districts in play throughout the nation that the Democrats might win, assuming they've already come up with a good candidate. Because in a lot of contests, the primaries are over, they've already have their nominees. But I think the Democrats really feel very, very good about what happened. And I think they also anticipate that they might very well win this seat in November. You know, Balderson really, the last 2 days, I thought, you know, the comment the night before the election, you don't want somebody from Franklin County. You can see the ad already for the November election. And then in thanking people last night, I'm listening and I'm thinking, you know, there was a way you could have included Governor Kasich in your thanks. You could have, you know, he thanked the president, the vice president, Pat Tiberi, and he didn't thank the governor. Everybody noticed that. And maybe, you know, he's mad at the governor, or maybe he was worried that the people in the audience might boo the governor or whatever.
Right.
But he could have done that. And so I have the sense here that, you know, and I was listening to part of the O'Connor, you know, this campaign itself isn't over, but we're already into the November campaign, and it's going to be the continuing campaign. And I think, actually, if the Democratic Party is smart, they will certainly identify this as a district in which they very well could win in November. And so, therefore, even though O'Connor hasn't accepted a lot of the outside corporate money and all of that, the Democrats should invest in this district.
Paul, your reaction?
Well, this was very much as I expected. I knew it was going to be a close race. The Republicans threw everything but the kitchen sink into the race, outspent the O'Connor people and his allies by a substantial margin. They brought in the vice president. They brought in the president. They brought in the Speaker of the House. I mean, everybody was here to support Troy Balderson, and he just edged over the finish line, at least as of today. I mean, there are still provisional votes to be counted, some absentees, I think probably many more provisionals. Those provisionals generally break in a Democratic direction. Whether it's enough to overcome the lead that Balderson has built up is, of course, problematic. But it's also just round one. We have round two coming up. It'll be a race that will be, I think, every bit as spirited as the round one race, except the Republicans, because they will have many more seats to defend and try to take, are not going to be able to concentrate the resources on the 12th district that they were able to concentrate in round one. A couple of things. I want to echo what Herb said about John Kasich. My sense is that John Kasich may well have won this election for Balderson if Balderson ends up being the victor. And the reason is that he's sort of, for Republicans who don't like Trump particularly, he kind of legitimized Balderson as a good mainstream Republican candidate who stands for the kinds of things that Kasich stands for. Again, when their margin is so slender, it's easy to find a number of factors that could have accounted for the final result. But this one, I think, is an important one. And then the other thing I would say, the real surprise to me in this race, was the turnout level. we're talking about a turnout that was not quite what the turnout will be in the general election this fall, but it came pretty close to it, actually. My count is that in 2014, there were 221,000 voters in the 12th district who cast ballots. This time around, it was almost 203,000. So we're talking about coming very close to that. I expected, to be quite frank, a much lower turnout in this contest. But the fact that it's come so close to kind of the normal midterm turnout means that it was a race that very much energized voters. It'll be higher in November. Part of the key in November will be whether either side can mobilize its base, and probably will have a lot to do with what independents, you know, people who are unaffiliated by Ohio laws are going to do. I think the big factor between now and then is going to be Trump. Mm-hmm. Balderson has very much hitched himself to President Trump, and if President Trump fares well over the next 3 to 4 months, he may be okay. If he doesn't fare well headed into November, and of course you have the Russia inquiry going on, you have a number of other things going on, it could well be that Trump is not as good an anchor for Balderson come November as he has been here in August.
Well, let me ask Herb about this. Herb, Governor Kasich has said publicly he believes that President Trump's rally for Balderson here on Saturday actually hurt the Republicans' chances of winning. What do you think?
Well, we'll never know that. And probably Trump energized some people, and probably he energized some Democrats. What's interesting about Trump is that the tweet that he issued was a typically self-serving Donald Trump tweet. He takes some misleading numbers, that somehow Balderson was—
Explain the tweet. The tweet said he basically won the race because he came here.
He won the race for Troy Balderson because, you know, Balderson was behind 64-36 in the early vote, but Donald Trump came in and saved the day. He didn't quite put it that badly, but it was almost to that effect. But in fact, if Balderson had lost, Trump would have said the same thing. He would have said, well, before I came in, Balderson was losing 64-36, and now he only lost by 1 point. So look at the major benefit I gave to his campaign, and if only they had been smart enough to ask me to come in sooner. So it was one of those, you know, heads I win, tails you lose kinds of, but silly statements. But again, the president really is very good at somehow trying to shape the narrative to talk about how influential he was in this race.
We're going to take a call. Michael from Columbus, you're on the air. Your question or comment, please.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering two things. One, I know Danny O'Connor and Troy Balderson will be on the ballot in November, but will the Green Party candidate, because that's 1,000 votes out of this 1,700 difference that seems like a big waste. But number two, the tariffs, specifically on the farmers in District 12, should kick in before the November elections. What kind of difference do you think that will make in the turnout or how people vote?
Michael, thank you for both questions. Jesse, real quick, is that candidate, the Green candidate, on the ballot?
Yes, okay. Joe Manchin will be on the ballot again in November. He's the Green Party candidate. He pulled a small percentage of the vote, but a number of the vote. And I suppose if you voted for him, you consider that to be not a wasted vote. And, you know, perhaps if you're one of those other candidates, you're concerned about those numbers right about now.
And will there be a Libertarian candidate on the ballot?
I believe that was decided yesterday that he will not be.
Okay.
And that was the fellow who had the same last name, O'Connor, which potentially would have been confusing for voters. But hopefully I trust in their ability to read Democratic versus Libertarian on a ballot.
And you hope people do read those ballots, right? Well, Paul, let's go to that tariff question. Interesting, because there are a lot of farmers in the rural area who we know statistically have been pro-Trump in many ways.
Well, it could matter. I think in terms of the numbers, there are actually not a lot of farmers in terms of just sheer voting numbers. Some of them have already seen the effects of either the tariffs or the threat of tariffs. Their markets are changing, particularly foreign countries that are buying their soybeans or their corn or whatever are beginning to look for other customers or other places to turn. So that could be a worry, although what we're hearing from interviews with farmers who have been Trump supporters both in Ohio and elsewhere is that their attachment to Trump is pretty strong. And just, you know, tariffs right now are not going to pull them away. Whether they do in the future is, it remains to be seen. I think there are a lot of other issues that will be important. And, of course, we have this ongoing Russia investigation. We don't really know how this is going to turn out and what effect it will have on Trump. As I said before, I think that Balderson, as is true of many Republican candidates across the country, is so tightly tied to Trump that if Trump's fortunes go up, they benefit. If Trump's fortunes go down, they are going to be hurt by that. And in an election that in the 12th district and beyond shows all kinds of promise for a Democratic wave, Trump's fortunes could really buoy them down.
Herb?
And assuming Balderson has won, that's the good news for him. The bad news for him, he's entering the U.S. Congress. And the U.S. Congress is one of the most unpopular institutions. And probably the best thing that Speaker Ryan could do is to make sure that the U.S. House is not in session very much between now and Election Day. But no, seriously, because if, in fact, Balderson is called upon to cast some votes, and they're votes that perhaps are very much to the right-wing part of the agenda, that will certainly be a campaign issue in November. And I think, as was said earlier, he's so closely tied to Trump right now that it's such an obvious point for O'Connor to be saying, look, I'll support Trump when he's right, but unlike my opponent, I will not be a rubber stamp. And I think that kind of independence, and that's been really a theme in O'Connor's campaign, would be reinforced if Balderson is now in the House and they manage to bring up some pretty, from some perspectives, bad legislation that he's expected to support.
It's interesting that you also brought up the Kasich not thanking him in his victory speech.
Yeah.
But Kasich did support him.
Yes.
And came out. So going forward, do you see this relationship deteriorating?
I don't see the governor campaigning every day out there on behalf of Balderson. And again, I'm not sure what was in his mind when he did not thank the governor, but it would have been so easy to say, and I thank my predecessors in this district, T-Berry and Kasich. It would have been a very easy way of doing that. And of course, maybe it was just an oversight, but every commentator has observed. And that's not good for Balderson.
Yeah, for what it's worth, in the statement they put out later, they did include John Kasich. So I don't know if that was an oversight at the time or if they're
backpedaling.
You can take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to take this call. This is Andrea from Columbus. Andrea, your call or comment, please.
Yes, hi. What about the excessive cost of this election to both the taxpayers and the public, and then 3 months later, you have this basically the same election? Why can't we do something about that? Either the person who gets elected now serves the next 2 years, or the 3 months of which the Senate basically or Congress isn't practicing.
Thank you, Andrew. We appreciate your call. And yes, there has been a lot of money spent on this campaign.
And I think what the caller, though, is referring to is not so much the campaign advertising and all of that, but literally the costs of actually conducting an election.
Or all of the above.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact is that, you have to open the polling booths, you have poll workers, you've got all this that's going on, all the materials that the Secretary of State's office has to put out and all of that. And it's simply the way we operate with respect to vacancies in the U.S. House of Representatives. Vacancies in the Senate are typically filled by an appointment by the governor, but the House sees itself as a much more small-d democratic institution. And there was enough time left in the term to, in fact, decide we're going to fill the seat that Pat T-Berry left. And, in fact, there were two elections. There was a primary election and then this quasi-general election.
Right.
So that the call is entirely right. It's very expensive. Now, the November election, the cost associated with that is because we're having a general election where we have all these other races on the ballot. So this contest is not adding any more cost to that election. The other part of it is the amount of money that went into this, especially the outside money that came into Balderson's campaign. It's amazing. You know, the happiest people, and I was talking to somebody at one of our local TV stations, their ad revenue was so fantastic. They were so happy. And
I used to work in TV, and I know that to be a fact.
And they were particularly happy. I mean, they have to give the best and lowest rate to the candidates, but to the parties and to the outside groups, they can charge a lot more. So this was a bonanza for the TV stations.
For what it's worth, newspapers do not get that money.
That is so true, unfortunately.
Oh. Paul, there has been a lot of mudslinging and voter shaming, which is kind of a new thing, on both sides. Do you see this continuing through November?
Oh, I think we've already seen what we're going to see in the general election campaign. My perception is it's been heavier on the Republican side than the Democratic side. The Balderson campaign has picked up a theme from Trump in characterizing Danny O'Connor. I haven't heard anything like that on the Democratic side. And then there was the voter shaming, trying to get voters to the polls, mobilize their base. Different techniques on each side, but both sides are trying to make sure that their supporters get out there and vote, and that obviously will continue. I wanted to come back to Herb's point about Balderson, if he is elected, taking a seat in the House. And that is that this may be an example where an incumbent really is not necessarily benefited by his incumbency. The Republicans, or the House, faces a big vote coming up by the end of September, and that's a vote on the budget. And the president already has threatened a government shutdown. Whether he follows through on that threat is something that just remains to be seen. But Balderson will have to, again, assuming that he is the elected member of the House, will have to cast a vote on the budget. And that vote, if he is supportive of Trump, I think will really be damaging to him in the general election. My guess is he will vote with the leadership, trying to approve a budget, but it's going to be a budget that is a deficit busting budget, and so you could see that theme, I think, being used in the general election campaign by the Democrats.
We are going to take a break. Thank you, Paul. Listeners can join the conversation. We are here with Paul Beck, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at The Ohio State University, Herb Asher, Professor Emeritus again from OSU, and Jesse Ballmert, State Government Reporter from the Cincinnati Inquirer. And we'd love to hear from you as well. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be back. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, in for Ann this week. The 12th District has been a Republican stronghold in the state for decades, but now that legacy could come to an end. A special election to take over Republican Pat Tiberi's seat is too close to call. The Republican candidate, Troy Balderson, has a narrow lead on Democratic candidate Danny O'Connor with fewer than 1,800 votes, and there are still more than 8,000 ballots left to count. Whoever wins this seat will have to run again in November, but this win could help propel them through the midterms. Still with us, Jesse Ballmert. She's a state government reporter with the Cincinnati Inquirer. Jesse, thanks. Mm-hmm. Herb Asher, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at The Ohio State University. Herb, thanks again. And still with us by phone, Paul Beck, also Professor Emeritus of Political Science at OSU. You. And Jesse, I'm going to start with you because you've kind of been on the ground, boots on the ground, as they say, attended campaign speeches. Recently, you were at the Trump rally this weekend. What's the feeling you get from people, sort of the political climate in the state, or at least in our part of the state?
So a number of my colleagues from Marion and Zanesville and Newark were talking with voters at the polls yesterday, and I thought that was the best insight into this. A lot of the voters really did take President Trump into consideration in their vote. If they were a Democrat, there was one lady said that she wouldn't sit down at the kitchen table with the president. And if you were a Republican, the fact that Donald Trump supported Troy Balderson was a good thing, actually.
Oh, okay.
Some of the folks were saying, you know, I like the way the direction of this country is going. And if Troy Balderson is going to help keep it going in that direction, then I want to vote for this guy. The president says that he's the person to keep doing that. And so I think Trump weighed heavily in this election, as we've all said. And I think that will continue to be the case into November.
Herb, you sort of mentioned this a little earlier about what we've seen here in Ohio as a precursor to midterm elections, not only here but across the nation. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. I think the significance of this election here is it said to Democrats, wait a second, we're very competitive in a district in which we really didn't think we really had much of a chance. And so now they start looking across the country. Are there other districts like this where perhaps the Republicans have an advantage? You know, they call it plus 7 in terms of the partisan advantage, plus 5 or whatever. And in those districts, have we already nominated a good candidate? And do we sense that there's a lot of energy in those districts? And so even as the Democrats look to the November election and are going to focus on districts that Hillary Clinton carried and all of that, and districts that are open seats or districts on the East Coast or the West Coast or whatever, this election says to them, along with the Connor Lamb election in Pennsylvania, maybe you can look a little bit more broadly to find those 23 seats that you need to pick up. So it's that, I think, is the most consequential thing here. And this is why Republicans should be nervous, because if Democrats can do so well in this district, that means there's a lot of other districts that were not on the screen before that might very well be on the screen for the November election.
So the 12th District, Paul, has been a Republican stronghold for decades. Kasich, T. Berry, what in this environment makes it different now?
It's what's going on in Washington, and it is Trump. Trump looms very large over this election on both sides of the aisle, both the Democratic and the Republican sides. We have to remember that Pat Tiberi, when he was running back in 2016, won the district by 37 points. So he really has been a big winner, and incumbency has been important for him. What happens after today is that Democratic momentum continues. They took a district that Trump won by 11% and have turned it into a razor-thin margin if they end up winning it here in August and then, of course, again in November. So I think that Democrats are disappointed by the result. The hope had been, of course, that Danny O'Connor would win. He may not end up winning, certainly based on the return yesterday. He is going to be a loser by a very, very razor-thin margin. On the other hand, he did far better than any Democrat could be expected to do in this district, and that bodes well for them across the country. So it continues Democratic momentum. Republican leaders, I think, are going to be disappointed by the result. You already saw, by the way, before the election results were known, that there was some Republican bad-mouthing of Troy Balderson as a candidate. And, of course, what they were thinking is that this is a district that a Republican should win. And we poured so much into this district to try to guarantee that he would win. And yet he just barely comes across the finish line. And so there's going to be disappointment on their part and real worries both about this district going forward, but of course about many other districts across the country.
Herb, do you expect Vice President Pence or the president again coming to Ohio before the midterms?
I think if you were the O'Connor campaign, you would hope that they would, because that's going to feed into a narrative that they're going to be making about Troy Balderson being a rubber stamp for the administration. And so I think they would love to have the president come in. Keep in mind that the Trump loyalists will be coming out to vote whether or not Donald Trump, and there's so much else on the ballot anyway in November. But I think, I think as Paul said, Trump is really in many ways a very disruptive figure, a very inspirational figure on the Republican side, a very negative figure on the Democratic side. But I also sense that there's some slice of Republicans, some people call them the NPR Republicans, plus in November there will be a greater share of the vote cast by unaffiliateds or independents. And I don't think Donald Trump helps Republicans with that group. So I think the Democrats would be just as happy to have the president come in and then run from there.
whether he's invited or not. And I guess that's still up in the air, whether we know that was true to come on Saturday for Balderson. Jane from Columbus, you're on the air. Your question or comment, please. Jane, hello?
Oh, yes. Hi.
Yes, go for it.
I'll follow up on the lady's comment about the cost of this election. Our polling station was changed, and we were given some information about possible voting at Morse Road or the Ohio Union. And the confusion was, in my mind, that I had a choice of either place. So yesterday I went out to vote at Morse Road, and they told me that I couldn't vote there. I had to go down to Ohio Union. I ran out of time, and I lost my ability to vote.
That's interesting. And I had no idea how the election process or polling works.
Well, what we saw is that we'll have to ask our caller, when were you notified about the change in the polling place? Because it turns out there were two precincts, like one in Indianola and then another precinct, in which the people who normally voted there were told they vote at the Ohio Union. So when did you get that information? Jane, are you still?
Oh, she hung up. Okay. Can't get that information. Sorry.
And I guess I'm a little surprised because I would have thought that perhaps they would have allowed her to vote provisionally up at Morse Road, and then they could have confirmed whether or not she had voted anyplace else. And so that surprises me a little. I think it's unfortunate that she lost her vote.
Because apparently she tried.
Yeah, she tried. Exactly. She tried. Exactly.
And I know in general there was a lot of confusion in Franklin County yesterday just because a lot of people saw the advertisements for the 12th District and perhaps they didn't actually live in the 12th District. There were a number of people in the 15th and the 3rd who, you know, thought they were going to be able to vote in this race but didn't and were not able to, obviously, because they don't live in that congressional district. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a bit of a confusion when these things are kind of gerrymandered in the way that they are.
What about the young people in this election and going forward to the midterm one in November? And Paul, I'll start with you. Big impact?
Well, it could be. Young people generally don't turn out at very high levels, much lower than you know, the elderly or even people of middle age. One thing that was, I think, different yesterday compared to what we are likely to see in November is students are not back on their campuses. And there is one big campus in the 12th district.
That's
at least
true.
Many students who are going to live in the 12th district who are attending Ohio State University. And then there are, you know, other campuses as well. And campuses are easy places also to mobilize supporters. And, of course, if the school is not in session and students are away during that particular period, they are not easily mobilizable. That will change in November.
Herb.
Yeah, and there's another aspect to the youth vote, which I don't think is going to turn out to be very significant, but little things can make a difference. And that is actually the movement started by the students in Parkland to try to energize young people who were very upset with what happened, obviously, in terms of the massacre down there, and also were very upset as they had these very reasonable proposals on gun laws and gun safety, proposals that almost 80%, 90% of Democrats, Republicans, and independents support. They basically were dissed in every state except Florida and Vermont. And these kids are talking about now trying to build a grassroots organization across the country to encourage young voters to vote. And in this case, because it's going to be a single issue, gun safety, they're probably implicitly saying vote Democratic. Now, is that going to happen? I don't know. But they have certain ways of communicating. They're forming organizations in high schools and things like that. And they can do this all on social media, and you and I will never know what they're doing. And will it make a big difference? Probably not, but at the margins. And that's where these elections oftentimes are won.
Well, look at the one we had yesterday.
Yeah. And so I think Paul's point about the college campuses being more mobilizable when they're in session, but also this extra effort to really energize young citizens who were really upset with what happened in Parkland and were upset by how they were treated in Ohio and 48 other states, not in Florida. Florida came through for them. That might make a difference.
Paul, you had said something earlier about what happens in Washington will affect this election and the rest. Do you really think going forward in the next few months, policy or what we hear in either the Manafort trial or the Russian investigation, all that is going to have a big impact on the November elections?
Well, I think it affects Trump's standing, and it could be his standing is lower going into November than it is right now. That means the Trump endorsement of a candidate is not going to be as helpful. And so I think that we're in a situation where national forces are far more important in 2018 than local forces. Incumbent members of Congress, and of course the majority of them are Republicans these days, are very much hoping that local forces dominate national forces. But I think that by November, this is really going to be a national election, and Trump will be the major factor there, plus or minus, depending upon the candidate and, of course, depending upon what happens with him.
You know, in some ways, if the Congress got out of session very quickly and the president went silent, you know, if you actually go back to 2016, I think one of the major contributions Kellyanne Conway made is she sort of convinced the president in the last month, or the candidate, I should say, to not be quite as vocal on Twitter and to not be quite as offensive or whatever. And, you know, perhaps if the president would just let the accomplishments speak for themselves, or if he were to advocating them, talk in a way in which he's not attacking other people. You know, he's constantly building himself up by tearing other people down. That just bothers a lot of people, and it bothers more people who are in the middle of the political, you know, they're moderates, unaffiliated independents. And so, again, all these things may not have a big impact, but cumulatively, you know, again, little differences make a big difference in terms of our election outcomes.
Jesse, as we move forward, what do you think the candidates learned from this election going forward? And you've seen them campaign. So anything that you see anybody doing differently?
I think Troy Balderson needs to hit the road and to definitely turn out a few more people. It was way too close in a district that it shouldn't be close at all. I think Danny O'Connor needs to talk to those college students who are coming back to campus.
Paul?
Well, I would add that turnout will be higher in November. Maybe not a lot higher, because this turnout for the August election has been surprisingly high. And the question is, who are going to be the voters who flow into the electorate in November? They will be more unaffiliated voters than partisan voters, because I think the partisans probably in the 12th district have been pretty well mobilized. And that will matter. And, of course, it'll matter what is at the top of the ticket and what those races look like as well. And there's a very, very tight gubernatorial race. It looks like Sherrod Brown on the Democratic side for the Senate may run away with that race and be easily reelectable. That will help Danny O'Connor, I think, as will the possible turnout increase.
Yeah. And Balderson needs to make, or his campaign needs to make, a decision. You know, the early indications, you know, he's so affiliating himself with Donald Trump. Well, that's actually, again, mobilizing the base. But going into November, that might not be sufficient. You might have to have broader appeal to the unaffiliated, the independents, the moderates, and all of that. So I'm not sure what lesson Troy Balderson has learned. And it sounded initially like he said, well, I'm a Trump man, and that's going to carry me through. And I'm not sure it will.
And that's interesting that you say that the moderates, though, may not care for Trump. So if he tries to bring other people into the fold, you may have to make that decision one way or another, that you're going to back Trump and Trump's going to back you or not.
Well, or, you know, if the Congress does have some tough votes and he goes against the leadership and comes back and says, I'm standing up for the district, you know, that may all be political theater, but it might be very effective political theater.
And, of course, we're always talking about whether or not the voter is educated. So this makes sure that the voter really has to learn where they want to get their vote and how they can find their information. Thank you all so much. What a wonderful conversation. Paul Beck, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at The Ohio State University. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Gail.
Herb Asher, Professor Emeritus of Political Science, also at The Ohio State University. Herb, thanks.
Thank you, Gail.
See you again. And Jesse Ballmert, State Government Reporter from the Cincinnati Inquirer. Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you.
This is it for our discussion on what's happening. Thank you for listening. We'll be back for the second hour. I'm your host, Gail Hogan, and this has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.